buckets and I didn't have anything at all in the filters. There's no sand or anything in there. Uh-huh. Incidentally, the water also comes mixed from fairly deep depths. Mm-hmm. They're getting a lot of water from anywhere from the surface to probably over 1,500 feet, all mixed up. Mm-hmm. And it's quite interesting water. I'm quite pleased with it.
How did you get hold of it? I mean,
I took a boat over there and pumped 50 buckets full of water.
Well,
right,
that would do it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was nice and easy to get. Mm-hmm. I was going to take a long hose down and see if I could get some deep water, but it doesn't really make any sense to get deep water from there because it's all the same.
Deep
it's all stirred up by the vortex.
Yes.
Okay, well, in case anybody else missed it, it's Dick here from Vancouver Island.
So the vortex that you're talking about is over in the Pacific?
It's in Inside Passage to Alaska, and it's situated adjacent to a place called Dent Island. And the vortex that I collected from is named the Devil's Hole. It's got all kinds of weird things about it. The main one is that your magnetic compass won't work there. There's a magnetic anomaly there that's noted on the chart, and it's intermittent too. Sometimes your compass will work, sometimes it won't, sometimes it'll actually spin. It's quite a strange phenomenon, but they're fairly common in the this area. There's fairly large magnetite and ore bodies, iron ore bodies around that cause compass deflection, so they have to list this on the marine charts. As a navigator, I knew this, so I determined that it might be a good place to start from, and that's where I got my first ocean ormus water, and I went over there. I wanted to make sure I got enough, so I got 50 buckets of it.
Anyhow, pretty interesting.
Yeah, Conti Schultz was in on this trip, too. He went over with me, and a student of his, and we collected all this water, and he's got, I'm trying to get my truck running right now to get some more water down to him so he can play with it, too. But it's fairly prolific, I think. I've never, the only water I've compared it to is water I collected on the same trip from a place called Middle Notch Island, which is way out in the middle of Georgia Strait. And the water there is fairly clean also, and it's also a lot saltier and about a quarter of the precipitate from Middle Notch Island. And we collected that from a deep area. So I don't know if it's what the action is there, but I know one thing. It sure seems to work.
Wow.
So,
and
I'm
going
to try and send some water off to various people to try and see what they get, and I've also got some salt extracted, which would make more sense to send. I'm getting some. I should be getting it this weekend, and if I do, I'll send some to Barry. I'll send you some, Barry, and I'm going to try and send some to Dennis. I don't know if that's shouldn't be a big deal, but
yeah.
I think it might compare favorably with this Horizon salt.
Excellent.
I'm not doing the crystallization, but the gentleman that is says, gee, this salt doesn't look like the regular sea salt that we're collecting.
Oh, wow.
So it might compare favorably with Michael Burberry's Horizon salt that he uses.
Worth looking into. So this water that you find, you think it's pretty well mixed from bottom to top. How can you tell that it's a vortex, or is that...
Well, when the tide runs, there's a whirlpool there that runs somewhere between, up to 120 feet across. It's a big one. You don't want to get in there when it's running because it'll suck you down.
Oh, wow.
And that's where some of the legends about it have come from.
Uh-huh.
Including there was one that an Indian told me about, an Indian that got sucked into it, a native guy. This was a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
And he came out the other end somewhere and walked back to where his tribe was, and he was a changed man.
Why was that?
Out.
I don't know if I...
Anyhow.
I got in on the tail end of that. Where is that at?
This vortex is a natural whirlpool, and it occurs between Dent Island and Sonora Island on the Inside Passage to Alaska.
Okay.
And it's called, the vortex is called the Devil's Hole, And if you've ever been there, you can see why. At times, you can see the bottom of the seabed at the bottom of the hole. Mm. If you're crazy enough, or if you've got the boat to do it, and you need a fairly high-powered, fairly fast speedboat to dip in and dip out. I've done it myself. It's a bit scary, but yeah, you can see right to the bottom.
Oh, wow.
And you just took salt water from there?
Yeah, naturally I waited until the tide was a bit slack, and then we scooted in there and pumped 50 buckets full of water and scooted back out again before the tide started to run. It was forming up when we left.
Hmm.
So it was it's a pretty good hole.
So did you look at it microscopically to see what the crystal structure looked like?
I haven't been able to get my hands on a decent microscope yet. I'm still collecting equipment for my lab, and that's one of the things I haven't collected yet. But so far as the precipitate is concerned, I've been getting, compared to just normal water, I've been getting about 3 or 4 times more precip out of that than anything. And here's another one that I found kind of interesting. There's about 30% less salt in that water. It doesn't evaporate down to produce the same amount of salt as the... As the regular water from anywhere else around
Next
here.
Time you go out, check the temperature and see if it's a variance in the temperature between the surrounding area.
The temperature is pretty rock solid at 36 degrees Fahrenheit, 36 to 38. And it doesn't change more than a degree from summer to winter. But the water that is mixed in with this comes from the glaciers in the inlets adjacent. So that's probably where the fresh water component is coming in, but there's something in that fresh water too, it seems, or there's something in the vortex that's energizing it.
Well, the vortex itself would be, you know, possibility of that, plus the fact the tide's controlled by the power of the moon a lot.
Absolutely, the moon mostly and the sun a bit too. So when
hey,
you get
I
a
see
big...
that Chaz is on. One thing I want to do is I want to announce the winner of the raffle. And, Chaz, your Priestess Alchemy has offered the prize for the raffle.
Yeah.
Could you tell us what the prize is?
I have to ask my partner. I have no idea. Hold
okay.
on.
All right.
What's the raffle prize?
One of each.
You get a the new platinum elixir,
mm-hmm.
Zenergy, and Cleopatra's milk.
we'll hear more about those.
That's quite
later.
A prize.
That is a good prize.
Yeah.
Chaz, is that the milk that Dana was feeding King? Was feeding Tut the cat.
That's the stuff.
Yeah, I have some of that, and it's an excellent product. And I want some more.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, it's wonderful stuff. And you'll be getting my order shortly.
So who won, Barry?
The winner is Alfredo Chong. And I'll be sending out a notification. I'm not sure if he's on the call or not. And if you're on here, Alfredo, let us know. Otherwise, don't. And we'll certainly let you know that you won. Well, without further ado, let's get started. There are now at least 24 participants. And my first question, I guess, Chaz, would be, well, how did you find out about this stuff? What got you started? How'd you learn about it? I heard that you met David Hudson a long time ago, but you're already doing mining-related work?
Yeah. How I ran into Hudson is I had a metallurgical laboratory in Tempe, Arizona, sharing the building with some just a cluster of different high-tech kind of people and high-speed Cray computers and audio, visual stuff, you name it. And anyway, I had my metallurgical laboratory in the building and behind the building. And David Hudson used to come, just kind of come by and just hang out. It was like a little research center there in Tempe. And at the time, I had no idea who he was. He would just always be shaking this little vial of this very light colored tannish product in everybody's face, saying this is monatomic gold. And, you know, I just give him this blank look like, yeah, so, you know, like, but he didn't elaborate. So I had no frame of reference at that time who he was. But my background in metallurgy, well, to preface it at all, I've got like multiple degrees in chemistry, biology, ecology, and all kinds of other things. So I have an extensive background and been working on metals extraction for, at this point in time, well over 25 years. So, at any rate, I met David, and then somehow I'd gotten in possession of one of his lecture tapes. I remember looking at that.
Well, that was probably more like 1995 or something like that?
Well, actually, 92.
Oh, you met him in 92?
Yeah.
Okay, when did you catch the lecture?
Somebody had given me a tape maybe a few years after that, and I remember just looking at it, but it really didn't capture my interest, really. Not in the slightest. Anyway, that's not what my involvement with this material actually came, many years later, quite by accident, actually. And it wasn't something that I set out to do at all. So at this point, Barry, we could kind of go into kind of how the whole thing got started. So anyway, I had this material I was working with in Tempe. I had these mining claims in Northern California, which kind of lost the whole thing in a drastic divorce. Wound up in Arizona, and then met this other wonderful lady who's still my partner in all this. Anyway, she was taking kind of like a cat nap in the afternoon one day, and she wakes up from this nap, and she said, "Oh, I had this dream. I know where the gold is." I go, "Oh, yeah, okay." And she described this certain double-forked oak tree in a pine forest, which is a little bit unusual. And, you know, so she makes this little sketch of the tree, and I go, okay, fine, wonderful, great, you know. And what we would do every once in a while on weekends is, you know, we're living up in northern Arizona here, have a Land Cruiser, it'll go anywhere. So she would, like, pack a lunch, you know, take a six-pack of beer and go just driving around up in the God's country, up in the mountains. So this one day, we had not set out to accomplish this, but we're driving down this old logging road out in the middle of nowhere, and she goes, "There's the tree." And I go, "What?
Really?
The tree from the dream." So we found a place to pull off the road, and I'd been a dowser just forever, so had this dowsing rod that I invented with me. So she's setting up, building a little campfire to do her barbecue picnic thing, and I take the dowsing rod and start kind of covering the area, and sure enough, right directly behind the oak tree was the first outcropping of this very unusual deposit. I'd never seen anything like it before, of this kind of a pinkish-colored volcanic rock. And actually, this is right in, it was an intrusion, a volcanic intrusion, in a granite formation. So this is pretty unusual. So I'm kind of dowsing my way along, you know, finding little tiny outcroppings in this thing. I finally come to this one boulder, and look up, and it's just like this whole like mountain of this stuff, huge.
Wow.
So took some samples back, you know, after the picnic and finishing the beer, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I was grinding it up. We had a jewelry company at the time, so I'm also a plater and all that stuff. So what I did was I put the ore into the jewelry polisher with some ball mill balls to grind it up, and then it was coming out real fine. It had a screen in the bottom, and it was the ore was kind of heaped up in this little plastic bucket. So I took an old rusty chisel and just kind of jamming the sand down, just trying to even it out. And I pulled the chisel out of this thing, and the chisel was like gold plated.
Oh, wow.
This stuff was that good. So what we did is, at that point, started hauling loads of it in the pickup truck. I found somebody to do some professional grinding, milling, and concentrating on the stuff. So I knew the gold was in there. I mean, you could pan it out with a gold pan. And we're milling on this stuff down to about 250, 300 mesh. And on the concentrating table, no gold. It's like we're going,
wow.
Where did it go? You know, we knew it was here. So that was like our first occurrence of just vanishing gold. I don't know if it was vanishing due to the sunlight, the energy input from the ball mill. Who knows? But I could never make it go as a mining project because you couldn't concentrate the stuff.
Now, was this before you contacted me or after? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, that's before I still knew nothing about this stuff.
Uh-huh, okay.
So, and I was working on that project on and off for about maybe 3 years. So I had another consulting job, and this is about the time that I'd gotten this junk email from some guy named Barry Carter.
Oh.
And I'm looking at this on the email and go, who the heck is this? How do they get my email? And went to the site and started looking at all this stuff, goes, well, this sounds real familiar. It sounds like maybe that tape that we'd seen, the Hudson tape thing. And I didn't delete the email. I saved it. I went, I don't know what the heck this stuff is, but I don't know. So I didn't delete the email.
Wow.
So I was working on this other consulting project for a Canadian mining company, and I was actually getting the gold out of this ore and being able to fire assay it. And this is a real freaky story. I had a gold bead and put it on the analytical balance. It'll read to four zeros, four decimal places. You know, a good size gold bead. I put it on the balance, and this thing is so sensitive. It has little glass doors on it. You can't even breathe on it. You can't have any wind, no temperature changes or anything, or it'll change it.
Sure.
So I put the gold bead on there, and I'm trying to get the thing to stabilize so I can get a weight on the thing, and it kept changing, kept going down. And so I stop, take the bead off, reset the balance, you know, close the doors and everything, put the bead back on, close the doors, and the weight kept going down. And I'm watching this thing keep going down, and this is really strange. And the weight kept going down, 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 and the bead visually kept going, getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. Finally, over the course of, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes, the weight went to 0.0000, and the bead was gone. I mean, it was gone.
Wow, that is weird.
So back to that particular project, it was during that project that I was developing an extraction methodology, a production methodology to extract the gold out of it, when I came upon the white stuff. I'd never had it come out of any ore before. Now, remember, this is the same ore that spit out the disappearing gold. So I had no idea what this stuff was, and I had some that was dried, and I had it next to the balance, and I was going to weigh it the next day and continue on with the experimentation. And then I remembered that I this junk email from this Barry Carter guy. So I went back, got the email, looked at the site again, and reading about this this white gold stuff. And anyway, that night we were going out to dinner with some people, and as I was going past the balance, here's this stuff, and I went, I wonder what would happen if I actually ate some of this stuff. So I took, I guess, the equivalent of maybe a big kitchen match head worth under my tongue, jumped in the car, went to pick up these people to take them out to dinner in Sedona.
Well, that was a big mistake.
Yeah. Well, I had no idea. So I'm driving along. We picked the people up. I'm driving along, and I could hear in my head exactly what they were going to say a nanosecond before they would say it.
Wow.
And this kept happening. And then it got worse. I could hear what they were thinking, not what they were just going to say, what they were, like, rehearsing in their head. I could hear what they were exactly thinking. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, you know, curvy, mountainous road between here and beautiful downtown Sedona. And I had to turn to the people in the back of the Land Cruiser and say, don't talk, don't think. I'm having a really tough time here. Absolutely true story. So that's when I went, I wonder, I guess this white stuff that I found is that the same alchemical white stuff. So that was kind of the moment that started the whole thing. That was the discovery point.
Wow. Now, you said, when we talked before, you said that that your ore, that your the vein that comes up where you get it is awfully similar to the vein that comes up where David Hudson gets his. Is that?
Where he did. That's
uh-huh.
That's what I heard, and I can't remember who told me. But anyway, somebody, you know, part of the grapevine, told me where Hudson's ore body was, and I'm in that same belt. It's kind of a continuation of the Bradshaw Mountains here, and really, as the crow flies, it can't be more than, I don't know, maybe 5 miles.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all along this belt. In fact, if when I turn right to go to where my mine is, and I look to the left in the direction where Hudson's was, I can see a similar pink deposit, you know, off about a mile or so on the side of the mountain.
Wow.
So it's quite possible. I mean, the pink, when you get a pink volcanic, it's pretty classic rhodium.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we've talked about the pink ores before.
Oh, yeah. So you started processing this. How did you figure out how to extract the ormus from the ore?
Well, you see, I was going at it completely on my own. I had no point of reference whatsoever as far as extracting the white stuff. I didn't even know it was there. So I think my technique is probably a little bit different than what everybody else is using out there.
Sure.
It's close enough, but there's variations. There's just maybe a couple of tricks that I stumbled upon.
Good.
Now, there's one other thing that I kind of like to throw in here, Barry. At this inception of the great work, if you want to call it that, and that is, it was about 3 days prior, I would say, to all this stuff coming out on the bench, that this neighbor of ours, who's a gifted professional psychic, been doing it spontaneously since the age of 11, and she's now like 36, so, you know, long history at it.
Mm-hmm.
Comes over to the house, and we're just kind of sitting outside having a coffee or something. And it's when right when she walks up, she goes, "Oh, I see this, like you have the purple, you know, violet aura all over you." She said, "I can see Saint Germain all over you." She goes, "You're an alchemist." And I'm going,
wow.
"Yeah, right." I'm going, "Yeah, right." you know, everybody in Sedona wants to hear that. And then she said that Saint Germain was like my personal guide, right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm going, yeah, sure, okay, fine. And because seriously, Barry, I had not pursued alchemy, hadn't pursued the, you know, white gold, any of this stuff at all, period. Uh-huh. I mean, I'm strictly chemist, metallurgist, that's it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm a lab rat.
Right.
So when we were talking, she said that Saint Germain was very fond of his wine. He really liked drinking wine. So I thought, well, what the heck? So that night, what I did was, just in case she was right, I said, well, you never know. You don't want to piss off the guides. I
uh-huh.
left a glass of wine sitting on this little table in the corner of the living room, and
uh-huh.
left it out for Saint Germain.
Huh.
So the next morning, I wake up, have my coffee or something. I wander over, watering plants or something. I look at the glass of wine, and there is a layer of absolutely super fine gold that was floating on the surface of the wine. I am not kidding you.
Of metallic.
Metallic gold floating on the wine.
Well, that's outrageous. That's
mm-hmm. So I considered that a sign that, okay, Saint Germain is definitely here. And see, you have to understand, I'm deep into this research project for this company. I mean, and this is a company, they're registered on the Toronto Exchange. These are the big boys, you know. This is
mm-hmm.
no lightweight story here. This is serious work.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was in the course of that, probably like 3 days later, that this white stuff appeared on the bench.
Wow.
And then I went into, you know, took a hard right. Well, those guys turned out to be a bunch of bozos anyway, ripped me off, never paid me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I didn't give them the formula either for anything.
Right.
And then took a hard right and went in the direction of the white stuff. So anyway, I wanted to throw that in, the Saint Germain part, because the alchemy and the relationship with the energy beings surrounding this material is really important.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I can throw in another little piece of the puzzle, and that is that before Audra had this dream, I became in contact with the Hopi Kachinas, how the Hopi described them and how they're described in their artwork.
Mm-hmm.
They're these very tall, blue light beings.
Uh-huh.
So I developed a relationship with these blue beings here in Sedona. So I'm sure they were instrumental in more or less guiding us to this deposit. So
when did you develop a relationship with them? When did that happen? Was that before?
Well, that was in 93. See,
uh-huh.
after I left Tempe,
uh-huh.
That's when I moved up to Sedona from there. So actually it was my first day in Sedona, my first official day in Sedona. I was walking up on Bell Rock in the morning, and these three tall blue beings, like, appeared to me. And, well, what they said was, you're home. And, I mean, this is my first day here. I hadn't moved here or anything. You know, I was still living in Tempe. So, anyway, they told me that... I was home.
Uh-huh.
You
wow.
want to go on a massive digression here?
Well, yeah, sure. Why not?
This is a very cool story. So how I got up here was this person that I'd met, they used to come down to this place in Tempe. Actually, it was Jimmy Delvitoso's place that was owned by Jordy Hormel, was kind of back on all this research.
Mm-hmm.
Hormel Foods. Jordy died last year. But anyway.
Oh, wow.
This guy had a bed and breakfast up here, and he would do these guided spiritual magical mystery tours up here in Sedona. So he wanted me to come up, and then I was supposed to help him do these tours. So, I mean, I had no clue, never been here before or anything. And so that's, I was going out that morning to just kind of look at some of these different landmarks around Sedona. So when I saw
Say that again. I got interrupted.
Well, why I was up on Bell Rock was to familiarize myself with some of the vortexes up here and, you know, kind of get a feel for the landmark, feel for the territory, so then I could, you know, learn how to do these tours. So when these three light beings appeared, I went, well, these guys are obviously locals. If anybody knows the turf, they would.
Uh-huh.
So what I did was I invited them to get in this little Jeep thing we had. Actually, it was a little Geo, and kind of guide me on how to do a quote-unquote spiritual tour of Sedona. So go driving out to the northwest side of Sedona. Bell Rock is on the south end, and about maybe 15, 20 miles away, going down this dirt road, and I hear this voice from one of the Kachinas in the back, and it says, make the first left that you can. And going, okay. So I'm driving down this dirt road out in the middle of nowhere, hear this voice in the back of my head saying, make the first left that you can. Then it said it again. And I'm driving along going, this is absolutely wacko. First I'm seeing these blue beings. Now I'm hearing them. This is too weird. And then the Jeep stops by itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just stops, like dead in the road. And I'm going, okay, now this is even weirder. And I look around, and to the left, I can see where there was an old Jeep track that was completely overgrown that went up the side of this hill.
Mm-hmm.
So I went, okay, Jeep stops, old track to the left, this must be it. So I drive up this track, come to a place, didn't go any farther, stop. And then the voice said, follow the trail and then look to your right. So I start following this little track up this mountain and get a ways up there. I look to the right, and I don't know if anybody's ever been to Sedona before, but it's a pretty wild place. Here is this rock formation all by itself, huge, maybe 150 feet tall, in this canyon. And what it was a cluster of the Kachinas as the Hopi paint them, with the space helmets, the kilts, the, you know, just full-on Kachina battle garb,
uh-huh.
Basically.
Was it actual physical Kachinas or just painted?
Yeah, no, this is an entire rock formation, Barry,
uh-huh.
150 feet tall with a cluster of six of these Kachinas together like this. I'm not, it's still there. I'll take you when you come.
Wow.
It'll blow your mind.
To have a picture of it if you...
Yeah, I've got it somewhere.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, what they had done was they had guided me to this point and then pointed out this rock formation, basically confirming that the way the Hopis had painted them was who they really, really were, and now they're just in this light being form. So who knows, maybe originally they came from outer space or something, you know, they're ETs, and got stuck here, and now they're just, you know, in their astral form.
Now, you say
so
that they're blue beings?
They're blue.
Uh-huh.
They're real tall and blue.
Because a lot of people have talked about this, seeing blue colors or blue, everything being surrounded by blue, that the blue seems to be a common theme with the people that have had Ormus experiences.
Yeah. Now, well, here's an interesting thing. As the work progressed, this was probably after a year after I'd been making the white stuff, the blue beings, they upgraded to more of a blue-violet.
Uh-huh.
And that's the way I see them now. In fact, I had a couple of gallon jugs that I just brought back from the lab sitting on the floor in the laundry room when I went back in to get them. I'm not kidding you. There were like three of the balls, glowing balls of the of this violet blue color, like zooming around these two jugs. I'm not kidding. Yeah.
We're getting an awful lot of noise from.
Okay. Well, okay. We're talking about the Kachina's.
The blue
beings. Okay. Now we're really gonna take a ride now, because. Okay. Here is this 150-foot tall rock formation, that has been naturally eroded to look like these Kachinas. Your classic. I mean, go Google Kachinas, and you'll see pictures from the Hopi.
Oh, wow, okay.
I mean, it's just classic. So, okay, how did the rock formation get carved out like that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, here's another thing, and that is, like I said, I developed a rapport with these beings. And to the Hopis, they were the gods of the Hopis. They had the like weather Kachinas. They had just Kachinas for every different purpose. So this one day, I got this psychic message from the Kachinas, and they said, "We will talk to you tomorrow at 10 a.m." So the next day, I was actually up in Sedona at this friend of mine's house, and I went, well, it's 10 o'clock. I guess I'll go outside and try to tune in and see what happens. Well, it was one of those days when it was almost like a fog in the mountains, like the mist, the clouds were like right in there, and it completely covered up the mountains. And what would happen is that the mist would part, and these humanoid faces that were actually in the rocks would peer out through the mist, one at a time. These faces would be revealed in the mountain.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm
tying all these things. So the blue beings are related to the humanoid face in the rock, so that something, it's in the mountains themselves, is this consciousness. These beings actually reside in the rock. You see where I'm going with this?
And so that you're, and they seem to be guiding you.
They're guiding the work. Exactly.
Oh, wow. Now, you mentioned that the work, that it's not just technical lab work, that there's things, outside forces and things in your consciousness that kind of have to take place in order for things to work. Is that?
Well, yeah, that's where I was going with this whole Kachina story.
Uh-huh.
See, what would happen is that, I mean, when you're doing this stuff, you can have all the all kinds of information in your skull, but that when it comes down to how to make things work on the bench, that's when you take everything you know, you throw it all out, and you just go at it. And so I would just be working, and I don't even know how to explain it. I would just do things that I didn't know. I'd do things that I didn't know that I knew. So I would just do it. So it's my personal belief that these rock entities, the Kachinas, whatever you want to call these beings, were actually guiding the work. And I'll tell you another tremendous story, and that is I took a beaker of the solution that I'd normally bring out. Because here's what would happen, Barry. Okay, I'd leave some stuff on the bench. I'd come back in the morning, and I could tell that it was messed with. I knew that these guys are working the graveyard shift. Okay? So what I decided to do, I went, okay, I'll give you your own beaker. I'll set it off. You can have your own bench. And here, you work on yours. Leave mine alone. So, true story. I took this solution that was basically pregnant solution with white stuff, hadn't been precipitated out, and left it for him. And over the course of about 3 days, it came out of solution. First, it went white. Then it went purple. It went completely purple.
Uh-huh.
Then it went back to white. And then it went back to clear solution.
Wow.
All by itself. And I didn't touch it. I did not touch that beaker.
Oh,
so what they were showing me was that the white stuff is actually the purple. I mean, when you bring these things out as if they come out as colloids, they'll, you know, depending on your particle size, they'll look purple.
Uh-huh.
So that's what they were demonstrating to me.
Wow.
That, now, you know, this is what's really in there.
Now, there's something that I'm a bit skeptical about things sometimes. I don't know if you've noticed that, but I am.
Mm-hmm.
And you've told me these stories before, and one of the first stories you told me was about, you said that you had a light bulb or something over your sink.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the light bulb story.
About that, yeah.
Okay, well, this is before I have the, you know, the big lab. I have, like, commercial space lab now. So basically, I had garage lab, and the kitchen sink was a lab sink. So where I would basically dump what was left of the solutions. I mean, you never get all the precipitate out of this stuff. I don't care how fine a filter you use. But anyway, kept dumping down the sink with the garbage disposal. Well, there's a recessed light fixture directly above it, and so you dump this stuff down. You get something left down in the sink to turn on your garbage disposal. Well, this kept happening. And I guess, I don't know, maybe 9 months later, the bulb finally burned out. So I unscrew the light bulb, I pull it out, and there was a ring of metallic gold right at the level of the filament on this light bulb.
Wow. Now, see, when you told me this, I didn't believe it.
And that picture's on the website, by the way, scanned.
I know. That's the thing is, when I was there, when I came down to Sedona for my first presentation there, you showed me the light bulb, and I took pictures of it.
Mm-hmm.
How did that stuff get in the light bulb?
Well, that's demonstrating that the stuff will levitate on magnetic fields from the garbage disposal motor.
Wow.
And, well, I think the oddest thing is that it would deposit, so it more or less electro-deposited from the radiation at the level of the filament on the light bulb.
Was it on the outside of the light bulb?
On the outside. But it penetrated right through the glass. It was on the inside and the outside.
It was on the inside as well?
Yeah, on the glass.
So,
under a microscope, you could see that this stuff had actually migrated into the glass.
It was inside the glass itself, not on the inside of the glass, but within
not
glass.
Just the surface. Yeah, it was inside the glass. This stuff will go through glass.
Was there another question?
Did you test the filament?
Pardon me?
Did you test the filament?
Test it for what? If it was deposited? No.
Yes.
No, the light bulb broke. Now, I came in, we used to keep a light bulb in the office, and one morning came in and it must have rolled off and hit the floor, gone, shattered. I didn't even think to check the filament.
Just cleaned it up. And,
shop backed it up, there it goes.
Now, other people have reported that this stuff seems to tunnel or teleport through glass or... Have you had any other experiences with that sort of thing?
Well, there's the other picture on the website where it went through acrylic.
Uh-huh.
Audrey had an acrylic little pitcher that she would use for watering her plants. So what I would do is give her the solution after I'd filtered everything that I could out of it, I'd give her the solution to water the plants with.
Oh.
And so that solution would just, you know, sit in that acrylic pitcher sometimes for a day or two. And one morning looked at the picture, there's, you know, solution all over the floor. And it had cracked the acrylic. So the stuff had migrated through the acrylic, somehow just shattered it.
Wow.
And the stuff, you know, went through the floor.
Oh, that's incredible. So,
yeah.
So what did it do for the plant?
I don't know. I'm just a plant expert. I never paid much attention to what was going on with the plants, but they're all, you know, they're all healthy. They all look good.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not the plant person around here.
Okay, good. Oh, so go ahead and continue.
Okay, where were we going? Okay, the beings in the rock. So where we're going with this is the consciousness. So, okay, if I'm doing an extract from the volcanic material, that just means that that particular deposit is just richer in rhodium and gold than your normal country rock around here, let's say. But that does not mean that any rock anywhere doesn't have this same material in it. It's like I found this one really ancient text about the stone, and it said it's called the phosphorus stone is called the hidden stone, and because it is hidden in plain sight everywhere. So that means it literally is everywhere. It's in every rock, every piece of dirt, every plant. I mean, the plants are absorbing this stuff out of the soil,
uh-huh.
combining it with sunlight and manifesting everything that we see.
Sure.
So,
sure.
Okay, going back to our train of thought there, what that means is that this consciousness, this intelligence that's residing in these rocks and can communicate is the same substance.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same stuff. It's the same intelligence. So I think what we're dealing with here is the consciousness of the planet itself and everything in the solar system, for that matter, in the galaxy, it's that same consciousness, but that consciousness, similar to us as humans,
mm-hmm.
can individuate as a blue being here, a blue being there, a being communicating out of a couple of beings communicating out of a mountain, but it's the same base consciousness. It's the same, you know, mother consciousness, whatever you want to call it.
Uh-huh.
And then all these beings individuate out of it. So that, to me, is really critical here, is to understand what it is that you're dealing with. You're not just dealing with some substance that just happens to be white and just happens to sometimes analyze as different precious elements or transition elements or whatever. What we're dealing with here is consciousness.
Uh-huh.
Consciousness of the planet.
Well, that's what all of the alchemists are always saying. Consciousness is the key, that this stuff is consciousness itself in some way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so where we were going with this consciousness thing is that, to me, since I developed this rapport with this Earth consciousness individuated as light beings or rock entities or whatever, it's my personal belief, and I'm not trying to be egotistical about it or anything like that, but I think that they've more or less been guiding me in the work. And that the whole purpose of this stuff is to make something that can jog people's human consciousness enough for people to gain a glimmer of this awareness, to reestablish that connection. And, you know, Barry, you've described it in a lot of different ways, you know, the Josephson tunneling effect and
uh-huh.
What's the... the quantum...
quantum coherence and...
Yeah, quantum coherence.
Quantum non-locality.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think it's a connector.
Yeah, so quantum coherence, I mean, that's just a fancy name for the fact that it's all the same consciousness anyway.
Right.
And so if we look at the real purpose of this material, it's an educational toy to get us back in touch with the planet, the solar system, and our galactic roots. It's a reconnector.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense to me.
And if you look at it on that basis, then, yeah, if you get some kind of effect from it or you start hearing the hue or, you know, whatever's going on with you, these are just little side effects. But the real purpose here is much, much deeper and more important than that. It's that reconnection. So, and I think this is what I see from the emails on the groups and whatnot, that people are completely missing the boat. I mean, completely missing the boat.
Mm-hmm.
That when you're dealing with alchemy, it's personal alchemy. Any person who begins dabbling in this substance at all, whether they're taking it, they're trying to make it, or whatever, once you stick your finger in that light socket and you start get connected, then you've just opened that door, and that's what it's all about.
I totally agree. That makes sense. Yes.
Not just to open the door, but walk through the door.
Uh-huh.
You know, don't stand on the outside going, oh, my God, I don't hear the hue today.
Yeah.
You know, who cares? I mean, how conscious are you?
Indeed, yeah. Now, I want to open it up to a few questions here. And then I also would like you to talk a little bit about some of your products, the Cleopatra's milk and the platinum elixir and all of that.
Okay.
But anybody that wants to ask a question, just go ahead and unmute and ask Chaz. And meanwhile, go ahead and could you tell us a little bit about Cleopatra's milk, maybe about some of the experiences that people have had? I know that Tut the Cat grew a new tail eating the Cleopatra's milk.
Yeah, well, that was quite a unique phenomenon. Now here's another thing. I'm just going to kind of drop back to where I was, and that is the substance, since it does have consciousness, it responds to intent. So maybe it was Tut's intent to grow a new tail, but also the Tut's owner's intent to grow a new tail.
Oh, yeah.
And that means that whoever uses the product, it's important to have that intent. If you don't have your own personal intent, what the material will do, since it has intelligence, it's going to do what you need it to do first. It may not be what you necessarily set out for it to do, but it's going to start clearing away all the other things going on first.
Uh-huh.
And then it may drop back and respond to your intent, or if your intent is strong enough from the get-go, it might just do that first.
Uh-huh.
So in all of my products, the basic white stuff is always the same stuff, no matter what I formulate it into.
Oh, so you're using exactly the same material.
Exactly the same. Yep.
So it probably would have worked just as well if that cat had eaten some of the other products instead of...
It could have been Lappin's Zenergy, and I think, if I recall, she was feeding it Zenergy in its milk and putting the Cleo's milk on its tail.
Uh-huh. As you know, I have a video of that cat eating the Cleopatra's milk, and that cat just laps and laps. I mean, this video is a long, boring video. The cat must drink probably 2 tablespoons of the Cleopatra's milk in that one sitting. And I know that the you've put fairly wholesome ingredients in.
Oh yeah, nothing but organic grapeseed oil.
Uh huh.
Yeah, everything is everything's pharmaceutical grade or organic or whatever. Yeah.
Uh huh. And
well, here, hey Barry, here's another story that actually I just got an email the other day. Kind of a new person just got a bottle of the platinum elixir, and their collie won't leave it alone. The collie just hangs around the bottle.
Uh-huh.
And I've had that happen before too. I remember we took some to a party, and this cat it was sitting on the counter. This cat hops up on the counter and wrapped itself around the bottle.
Oh,
I mean, it's just cradling the bottle.
Uh-huh.
So animals instinctively know, you know, there's something going on with this stuff.
Well, I've a friend who told me that her boxer dogs, that she'll put this stuff on her skin, and they'll come and lick her skin.
Mm.
That they will not leave it alone.
Uh-huh.
Same thing.
Uh-huh.
Does anybody else have any questions?
Hey, let's talk about glass.
Glass?
Want to talk about the psychic stuff, the glass, the field effect, making the Ormus glass?
Yeah.
Okay. Because it's just on one of my notes. What I did was I took it. It required a fairly large quantity of it to start with. Put it in the furnace at 2,300 Fahrenheit, which is as high as that little furnace would ramp up.
Uh-huh.
And it took quite a while, but it the white stuff resolved itself into pretty much of a clear. It would either go a very, very light shade of purple in the glass.
Uh-huh.
So what we have here is an Eccoli wheel. And I remember in the list, you know, many years ago, a lot of people talked about the Eccoli wheel.
Uh-huh.
What it is a measurement device for psychic energy fields, or just unseen energy fields.
Right.
And so I had the Eccoli wheel sitting on like a coffee table, and I just walked down the hallway carrying this little piece of glass around, and it would move the wheel
uh-huh.
at a range of about 15 feet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and this thing is so sensitive. I mean, normally, in order to get the Eggly wheel to move, you have
uh-huh.
to bring your hands within a few inches of the wheel
yeah.
before it would turn. This piece of glass was making this wheel go at a range of about 15 feet.
Oh, man, wow. Now, was it pretty much transparent? Could you see through it?
Yeah, it was pretty clear, yeah.
Uh-huh.
There, yeah, was that made from the gold?
Yeah, from the exact same, white stuff, yeah.
Well, it's the mixture of all of the elements, right?
Yeah. Actually, the material reads, I had the ore analyzed with ICP,
uh-huh.
and the precious metals read iridium, rhodium, platinum, palladium, gold, and
uh-huh.
And some silver
uh-huh.
in the precious metals. And then we've done a lot of SEM work on the material, and at least on the extractions.
That's what's that? SEM?
Scanning electron microscope.
Uh huh. Okay.
On SEM, on the extract product, and you have to remember that iridium is just the toughest damn thing to put in the solution to get it to read. To get it out of any material. So this is on the extracts, and they read in descending order rhodium, platinum, palladium, gold, in that order. Very little silver.
Uh-huh.
And then since we're on that subject, under X-ray fluorescence, the stuff reads as calcium. No precious metals at all. Calcium.
Uh-huh.
And there's no calcium in it. Zero.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, wow. I mean, totally zero. Other assay methods, you don't get any?
No, you try to do atomic absorption or something like that, nothing. You don't get it. You don't get anything.
Uh-huh.
And
you've been able to make something that assays is pure nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Calcium.
Uh-huh. That's cool.
Yeah. String of zeros on precious metals. But you can bring this stuff out, and it, like I said, it'll be stable for at least a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll stay stable for a little while, so then you can actually see the metals under under magnification.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can see the gold. You can see the platinum. You can see the rhodium. I mean, it's there.
Wow.
You can see it, but it's not. It's really generally not stable enough to get it to read.
Uh-huh. I'm going to drop the free room. Can you hear me now?
Yep, yep.
Okay. Now,
Where'd
the pig go? Yeah. I think that might have been it. There might be some interaction with the free room. Okay. Hey, everybody.
That got rid of our noise, didn't it?
It did. Everybody can
know.
Well,
Chad, this is Tim. I have a question for you on the glass.
Yeah.
When you were talking about the energy field, are you saying that the device that was turning towards it was picking up a field that the glass itself is putting off, or is it shielding the room in a way that makes that traps that field?
No, it was the glass. Because, you know, I'd walk all the way down the hall. You know, outside of range about 15 feet, the wheel wouldn't move anymore. And then I'd come walking back. We did this a whole bunch of times. And sure enough, you know, the and then as you brought the glass closer to the wheel, it would spin faster. The more rotations you get on the wheel, the more energy.
Well, one of the things I was speaking to Danae about was creating a greenhouse with a geodesic dome made out of that glass.
Well, yeah.
See what kind of effect you would end up with on the any plants or other things that you would do in that room.
I know. Well, that's one of the things actually that I wanted to accomplish. Not so much the glass. It's really tough to make this glass. You start out with a huge amount of material, and you have to remember that this stuff will volatilize and want to disappear. So you have to start out with, let's say, a coffee cup full of the white powder, and you will wind up with a piece of glass the size of a marble.
Wow.
So if you're trying to make a bunch of glass, you know, maybe the people that made the glass in the cathedrals in Europe and stuff, you know, maybe they had it down, and I just don't have it down, which is more than likely. But
I think it's a possibility they made glass in a normal way and then glazed it with that kind of a finish.
Oh, that makes sense.
And I think it would give it the same effect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or even included it with regular silica in the glass.
Right. There may be a way to do some kind of electroplating type process where you actually would fuse it onto, similar to what we're doing with UV type protection.
Yeah, vacuum deposit it.
Right.
Well, with respect to a greenhouse, my idea was, if you're cooking this stuff, doing the extractions, you have a whole lot of steam coming off it, vapor coming off of it, and that was to pump the vapor into a greenhouse, because you have to exhaust the gas somewhere.
Right.
So run it through a greenhouse. I actually have a lot of this stuff set up, but takes a lot of money to do these.
Well,
projects.
Barry spoke a little while back about just transporting this stuff around, it would get on the glass like a film.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not good if you want to be visible, but if you're just wanting to create an atmosphere, that might be okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I think just storing it in a room with normal glass that might be blocking the UV on the outside, it would be possible to create that kind of environment.
Well, now, here's one thing I think you have to bear in mind, and that is that sunlight will take this stuff to metal by itself.
Right.
And Barry, the Essenes talked about that, right?
You bet. And Don Nance has actually done that, exposed it to UV, and it does seem to take it to metal. Have you had any experience with that at all?
I can't say in terms of any kind of like hard research. I can't say that. No, but it's like a known phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, believe it or not, there are a lot of people out there in the metallurgy industry. They do know about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there was this one company. They went they went public on NASDAQ, I think. It was the Lakefield project. I think you can still Google it.
Uh-huh.
What they were doing is they had this huge deposit out in Nevada, and they were milling it up, spreading it out into the sun, and the idea was that it was going to go to metal.
Uh-huh.
Of course, they went belly up.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, there's a lot of people that know about this. So,
sure.
If I was going to do the greenhouse thing, I would just do it, extract, do hydroponics with the stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, let the plants turn it into the metals in the plant leaves. Let the plants do the work.
Uh-huh. Or whatever they do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I would do.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Chaz?
Yeah.
This is Joe with the Border Collie.
You know,
oh, yeah, yeah. Hey, Joe.
She seems to like this phone call, too, because she won't leave me alone as I'm walking through the house.
Oh, really?
I think she feels the energy.
Joe, did you give her any of the stuff to drink yet?
Actually, the other day I opened up a brand new bottle of the platinum elixir,
mm-hmm.
and I spilled it all over the counter, about half of the bottle, actually.
Oh.
And so I gave it to my whole family, and, you know, like I tried to scoop up a little bit of it.
Uh-huh.
And then there was a bunch left, and I let her go at it, and she loves it.
Oh, good.
Not the best way to do it, but...
Yeah, yeah. Ah, that's funny.
Yeah, but the whole family, it does take away the negativity, and it works with me within like an hour.
Oh, that's great. Takes that long?
Well, sometimes. It depends
yeah.
how negative I am.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then, you know, that day, I actually, if I could be graphic, I didn't want to waste this stuff. So I took, you know, I put my mouth right on the corner and just was, like, sucking it up. So I got a lot in me.
Uh-huh.
And then I was out with my my son at karate. And I was just very alert in an extreme meditative, awake state. You know, it was very nice, but I wish I wasn't at, you know, karate when this happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Hey, has anybody out there experimented with any of these things versus chemtrails and ELS? No.
No, I haven't heard of that.
Well, Joe, since you brought that up,
yeah,
and the negativity thing, I've been correlating chemtrail activity here with good old President W. And going on. Television, and it was the day before he went on the tube to talk about escalating the Iraq war that they chemtrailed real heavily, and it was the day before that day, and then the next day after, you could see in some of the jets there's just a little bit left coming out, not a lot, and so what I've correlated the chemtrails with is it's kind of like just this real heavy, almost depressive energy that goes on. And so what I did is I kept taking the platinum elixir until I bumped that completely out. And I think it took me probably maybe three doses over the course of maybe 4 hours
uh-huh.
until I beat it.
So in other words, taking the elixir... changed your mood enough that the chemtrails didn't seem to bother you.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I would like to see a lot more work done in that area. I really would.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the context of slurping it up off the table, you told me that there was a Colombian guy that came and visited you once. Could you tell us about that?
Oh, no. This is funny. Well, I keep putzing with this, with the chemistry, you know, always. I mean, it's always been the same recipe. I mean, I'm very, very consistent about that, but I will do exploratory research. Well, I brought out some that was absolutely snow white, crystalline, looked like mother of pearl flake, And this actually was one of my clients, one of the partners came through. He's this Colombian guy. He sees the stuff and he goes, "What's that?" I told him this is white gold. He says, "Well, what do you do with that?" I said, "Well, you know, you can eat it. You know, and dip my finger and lick a little bit of it." He says, "That's not the way we do it back home." He just starts hoovering away at this stuff. And it wasn't just once that he would do this. I mean, he just kept doing it. I mean, every time he'd come into town, he'd go, "Where's the bottle? Where's the bottle?" I'm not kidding.
Huh. Wow.
And, yeah, I actually tried it. It will definitely change your life.
Huh.
In seconds.
Uh-huh. Wow. So, in other words...
Not great for your sinuses, of course.
No. Great. Sinus friction, whatever they call it.
Yeah. Sinus friction, that's a good one. You're so clever at all those things, Barry.
Hey, Chess. This is Adam in Ashland, Oregon. I've got a general question for you about dosage. Just got my bottle of Elixir day before yesterday, and, you know, the standard dose on the label is marked as a quarter teaspoon.
Right.
Which is a pretty tiny dose, and I have to say I'm already getting pretty amazing hits of euphoria off the stuff. Twice
yeah.
a day. It's real interesting for a newbie.
Yeah, well, see, like me personally, I usually will take 10 milliliters of it in the morning and maybe 10 milliliters at night.
Mm-hmm.
But like that day that I was trying to counteract the chemtrails, I was up to about 50 milliliters.
Holy cow.
Now, see, we have some people out there that are so sensitive, like maybe 5 drops, and they're out of control.
Mm-hmm.
So I put the 5 milliliters on the label, just kind of an arbitrary dosage. And then if you do that, your bottle will last you about a month.
Uh-huh.
But there's no hard and fast rules about it at all. None.
Well, I never read the labels.
That sounds like you, Barry.
I've just been putting it in the cap and dumping it in my yogurt in the morning.
Well, a cap is about 5 milliliters.
A cap full?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So you're doing it right.
Oh, okay. Good.
Well, this is good about the euphoria. And with the new product, I mean, I really need all the input that people can come back at me with,
mm-hmm.
you know, anything. So please email me.
Well, it's going to be an interesting journey for me because I started out with a bottle of Zenergy
uh-huh.
and enjoyed it, but it really didn't ring with me. And
mm-hmm.
already... this mm. bottle of the standard Elixir is really starting to do some interesting things.
Well here's the thing about Ashland, if I can interject here.
Uh-huh.
Back when I remember this about maybe 7-8 years ago, when the information first started coming out about ELF, there were, I think, about 30 people that committed suicide in Ashland when they first lit up the first cell tower there.
Mm.
And a good friend of mine that actually is, like, with me almost daily here was up in Ashland and wound up on my doorstep just about dead from the waves. And he's a very, very sensitive person.
Mm-hmm.
So point being that the Platinum Elixir was designed specifically to counteract the kind of electromagnetic crap that you have in Ashland. Not that it isn't everywhere. But if you've got 30 people that committed suicide in a month in the same town right after they turned on the ELF Tower, I think that could be saying something.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this valley is, you know, it's a closed, long, narrow valley, and I wonder if part of it isn't the fact that they've got so many towers because there's so many cell networks around here, and
yeah.
they're all, you know, they're all up and down this valley. They're line of sight wherever you are. And it's sort of a closed
yeah.
environment.
Well, this goes back to right when the whole cell tower thing started.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's completely that long. But I do remember that one of the first places that they were experimenting with mind control in the ELFs was Ashland.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and this goes back how many years that you know of?
Oh, I can't even. Maybe 8 to 10 at least, I think.
Okay. Because I've been here for 18 years. I was just curious when that started.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Well, interestingly enough, the universe seems to be lining me up through this stuff in sort of gradations because, like I said, I bought the Zenergy first.
Uh-huh.
Decided to try platinum for my second, I tried the elixir for my second order, and Audra emailed me and said, you ought to try the platinum.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow that did not get manifested, and what I got was elixir, but the next one will be platinum, so it's an interesting little step-by-step process.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember seeing that email. That was, kind of got glitched. It's not easy for her, believe me.
I don't mind.
Yeah, you get a ton of emails a day, and you got these orders spread all over, and you go, who was it that wanted what? So.
Yeah. You mentioned that one time a whole group of meditators took. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yeah. Okay. This was right after I developed Zenergy, and there was a meditation group that would get together in Sedona, and they would try to link up consciousness and then do healing work on people.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they've been doing this for, a couple of years. So I sent up a couple of bottles of Zenergy, and this is like a group of about 30 people. And what happened, they all took it. They all kind of, went into their space. This had never happened to them before. They all linked up. They all had the same vision at the same time, and that blue beings that appeared to them and said, look, we know what you're trying to do with the healing people, and they said, well, that's a very noble thing for you to try to do, but you're not very good at it, and you're kind of screwing up the energy waves out here, and we would prefer if you ceased and desisted and let us do it. They said, just, do your group consciousness thing. Just give us the names, and we'll do the healing. In other words, get off the line.
Wow.
Absolutely true story. And then right after that, the group broke up. They never met again. That was it.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, I think the beings just scared them.
Uh-huh. Well, it might be good to do an experiment like that where people aren't doing anything intentionally. They're just meditating together. Because I heard a similar story. A group of people in Halfway, Oregon, took it when they were meditating. They said that they had exactly the same meditation experience,
mm-hmm.
although they were just meditating to meditate,
Yeah. Well, we've tried it with different groups of people in like just a party atmosphere, not necessarily a meditation type experiment, where you pass it around and each person would take some, and then when the last person had taken it, it was like the loop was completed, and then there would be a group quantum shift in consciousness just as the last person took it.
Wow.
That's happened more than a few times.
Oh, wow.
And usually when we'll do it in this party atmosphere, it's like, for one thing, it counteracts the effect of alcohol.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've heard that.
And usually people will say afterwards that it was like the best party they ever went to, and everybody was communicating, nobody got obliterated. It was just a really wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So, it's that quantum coherence facilitating the communication that I think is important.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Very good point. Well, that's a good idea. I think that Ormus parties. Yeah, what a great idea.
Yeah. With tequila. it's synergistic with tequila.
Okay.
What was it? Hudson's research with Oliveira. That he found a lot of the stuff in Oliveira.
Uh huh. Right.
Yeah. Well, agave plants are similar to Oliveira. It's a desert plant that holds moisture. So, stuff's very synergistic with tequila. Oh, and coffee. There's a lot of rhodium in coffee.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow.
So,
how, What makes you think that?
Well, actually, it's some apocryphal information that I got from my SEM guy, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, he's analyzed all kinds of different substances and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
So.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, and different plants will also kind of bring out the different elements or concentrate different elements.
Mm-hmm.
Like alfalfa has a lot of rhodium in it, and wheat has a lot of palladium.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, okay. Huh. Now, you said that you... Speaking of coffee, you sometimes use this as a creamer in your coffee?
No. Well, it was. I have this real high grade extract. That's it's not snow white. It's a little bit on the creamy side, and it's like 84% rhodium, 14% gold, and just a trace of maybe a little iron in it. So it's real high grade stuff. But it looks like coffee creamer.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in the lab, I mean, you'd have to be there to kind of get a feel for this whole thing. But you're out of any kind of coffee creamer, and here's this stuff that looks like coffee creamer. So you just kind of put it in and mix it around. But that stuff is that it will rock your world. It's
uh-huh.
I don't do that very often.
Ah, okay. Wow.
It's just way too powerful.
Now, do you sell any powder product?
No. Mm-hmm. No, it's not something that I'd ever want to ship through the mail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we've actually had, I'll tell you a story. We are actually shipping some antique leaded glass long crystals to my mom.
Mm-hmm.
In the mail. Mm-hmm. And that box wound up on our doorstep the next day. It had been opened, and so it did get x-rayed.
Oh, wow.
And they must have thought that since it was leaded glass, it must have shown up looking like bullets or something.
Mm.
They thought that, you know, we're terrorists. Or...
Oh, wow.
And my mom's 85, blonde, blue eyes, and when she goes to the airport, they always just tear her apart. They just go, "You're a terrorist." So I don't know.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, that's I would never, I won't ship any kind of a white
mm-hmm.
substance
mm-hmm.
in
yeah,
powder.
Yeah, you got to be kind of careful with that stuff.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of areas in this that people have to be kind of careful with because.
Well, see, and the other thing, at least when it's formulated up, that you know, it's the rare person who's going to drink a whole bottle of this stuff. Whereas
right.
if you've got some white substance, somebody might go, "Oh, I'll just woof the whole thing,"
uh-huh.
and then they're in trouble.
Right.
Well, and like that's another little story that I could tell is that it was some guy who was on the list. This is going back quite a few years. I can't remember the guy's name, but there was a conference, wasn't this one that you did, Barry, in South Carolina or something?
I
it was in a hotel.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I did one there. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, some guy had a bottle of Zenergy and, you know, took the normal dose, nothing happened, took another dose, nothing happened,
uh-huh.
drank the whole thing,
uh-huh.
then claimed, "Oh, I didn't feel anything," but was up all night terrorizing the hotel to the point where they threw him out. But I didn't feel anything, you know.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, that's a problem is people feel like they've taken a drug or dropped acid or something like that, and it doesn't feel like that at all, and so they say, "Well, it didn't do anything." But in fact, it's doing a whole lot of things that they're just not noticing because they're not looking in that direction.
Well, yeah. Now, here's another story that happened to us is that one customer was actually a mental patient who was kind of out on parole
mm-hmm.
and was out of the hospital and was on SSRI medication and was found in the middle of a busy intersection, directly in the middle of the intersection with a bottle of Zenergy in his hand directing traffic. Needless to say, they came and got him. It was the pharmacist pharmacy nurse that called us and said, okay, what's in this stuff? And that's why on the website I put the warning on there. Don't take it if you're on SSRIs.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Well, I've heard of people that have taken it and been able to quit SSRIs more easily.
Well, that could be. See, I think what's happening is it might up your serotonin level so high if you're still on the SSRIs, see?
I see, okay.
So you could taper off, maybe. But to do them both at the same time and chug away at the whole bottle, yeah, you wind up directing traffic.
That's a classic story.
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff?
Yeah.
I got a quick question for you. How do you make your, what method do you use to make your platinum?
Well, the platinum itself is, it's four nines. I actually bought it. It was custom manufactured for me by a refiner. This was left over from a different project going back a couple years that I had. And how I came up with this whole thing is this friend of mine is a gifted clairvoyant, and she has cancer. And I ran into her at the health food store. And so this other neighbor of mine, the first person that told me about, you know, St. Germain and that I was an alchemist and all this stuff. Now, you know, she's a professional psychic, and she's chronically ill. And so I thought to myself, well, okay, we got two psychics chronically ill. What's going on? And I think that they're getting energy attachment from the people that they're trying to assist. They don't know how to block that energy from attaching to themselves. So, okay, here's this friend of mine. She's got cancer, and I'm thinking to myself, well, what do I have in the arsenal that might be able to help her? Well, one of the most powerful pharmaceutical products for cancer is called cisplatin, made by a lot of companies that make this stuff. Really expensive stuff. So I thought to myself, well, okay, I've got this machine. It's a thing costs $15,000. It's a sonicator. It's from a company called Sonix, and it will take finely divided powder of anything, and it will smash it down to nanoparticles. Mm-hmm. It takes a while. And so what I did was I started sonicating some of the platinum, and then mixed it with the white stuff, sonicated them both together, and then she's a gifted clairvoyant. I mean, we were doing this when we were making the first batch. The energy field in the room was just incredible. I mean, we had to leave the building. I mean, the building. And so I gave this stuff to her, and she immediately felt this shielding effect. Now, you have to remember, I didn't set out to do this necessarily. I mean, we're just, like, putzing around in the lab. It just so happened that it worked. So getting back to the whole thing, it really is a 4-9 platinum. Costs a bloody fortune to make, but I had it sitting around, you know, it's just something sitting around. So
what happens when you run out, when this becomes your most popular product and you run out?
Oh, I just call the company and have them make more.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it was custom manufactured.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, it's not like you can take a platinum bar or something, put it in the sonicator. That doesn't work.
Right.
What you'd have to do is put the platinum in the solution, and we've done this before too, and put it in solution and then drop it out with metal as metal and sonicate it at the same time when it's coming out. And then you can get the finely divided platinum.
Oh, wow.
It's about the only way to do it.
And you think that it is in the Ormus state or the...
No, the platinum itself, I'm not calling that Ormus or not at all. It's merely a nanoparticle. It has something to do with the interaction of the metallic particle with the non-metallic particle.
Mm-hmm.
There's some kind of oscillation going on there.
Oh, wow, okay.
I think what could be happening is that the elements, the Ormus elements, are probably attaching and then unattaching from the platinum particles and creating the oscillation.
Huh.
I can't say that categorically.
I have a theory about that so far I haven't found any way to prove or disprove it, and that I believe that the Ormus elements have a tendency to pull regular elements, metallic elements, into the Ormus state.
Mm-hmm.
If they're and I've sort of by taking it, I've sort of verified that somewhat for my own theories, but I can't really think of any way to prove that.
Well, it goes the other way as well.
Yeah, I'm sure
that the Ormus elements will come out, attach themselves to the platinum particles, and then they'll kind of go metallic for a little bit, and then they'll go back.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be both happening at the same time. That's what's creating the oscillation and the energy.
Like a double chemistry, double replacement reaction.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I suspected as much, and I'm just still trying to figure out how the this might go along too as to how a person can more or less control what they get out of it. The part that you need might spring from platinum that causes some other element, for example, gold or maybe rhodium or even silver, whatever, to come into existence long enough for your body to take advantage of it.
There you go.
Your dense body. Anyway, yep. That's something that we'll have to play with.
Oh, yeah.
That's a real good idea.
We've got
I'm still working on my lab here, so I haven't gotten very far yet because of money concerns, but there's a spectrograph sitting up in northern B.C. I'm going to go look at this month, and some furnaces and things, and a lot of glass that I've got to buy. I've got a shopping list here that's gonna probably break me for a little while, but I'm on the path, that's for sure.
Oh, well, good.
We've got time for one more question, and then we're gonna have to shut down here. Oh, well, one more question and one more answer.
I have a question. This is Thomas in Dahlonega. Chaz, have you ever seen Andara crystals?
No.
They look very much like what I understand Ormus glass looks like.
Where do they come from?
Well, they're dug up in natural deposits, but the best of them come from what I understand is the Donner Pass in California, and much of the deposit has been covered back up. They have that same energetic signature that you can feel from across the room.
Uh-huh.
I was just wondering if you have any experience with them and what you might feel about them being Ormus.
I haven't seen them. But I'll tell you one thing. Like when you talk about energy fields, something that just kind of I remember where this deposit is. I can feel it. You driving it. Over it in a pickup truck. I mean, just feel it. It's just, so even if it's not in the glass, I mean, just in the ore state, it's a pretty powerful field effect.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing's like in its own mesa up in the middle of nowhere, way up. It's pretty unique place.
Wow. This stuff looks like volcanic glass, and it's supposedly prima mater. Material and
okay.
It's Andara, and it's a very limited supply.
Uh huh.
Where did you see it, Thomas?
I've seen it in several crystal stores. I have a big chunk of it that's green. It comes in brown. Lavender is no longer available. It certainly is the highest energy. I have a friend in Mount Shasta who owns a crystal store, and she has a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody
did bring me a piece of similar glass. They said it came up from more like the Shasta area, not Donner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of it goes through Shasta. It's sold by the gram. It's very expensive stuff. But
wow.
And certainly if it's pure Ormus, I'm going to try to dissolve it in some lye and acid and see what I can do. But it bubbles with peroxide and acid, and it reminds me of the story on the website about Ormus glass.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll send you a shard.
Yeah. Hey, Thomas, I just sent Chaz a copy of your picture of the aura.
Sure enough.
We're thinking about using it for the poster for my next presentation, which I wanted to bring up. And it's going to be in Sedona on the last weekend of February. I'm also going to be in Phoenix the first weekend of March and Tucson the second weekend in March.
Mm-hmm.
And I presume
higher resolution
it's okay
check.
If we, yeah, I presume it's okay if we use that. I think I can find a higher resolution pic that you sent me. And Chaz has been also working with a local aura photographer, and has gotten several aura photos up on his website. And
but nobody can get me any decent resolution.
Uh huh. Oh, I see. The quality of the pictures.
Yeah, the right. Image.
Because they're Polaroids.
Yeah, if I had the Polaroid, I can scan it, you know, close and you know, do it in Photoshop where you can hold your resolution. But if you just take these things and put them through a regular flat paper scanner or something like that, it just comes out garbage in, garbage out. So, yeah, I don't know. If you got a better resolution, that'd be good.
I'll send you what I've got, the original size ones.
Okay.
I think those were taken off the website. I don't know. I'll have to see.
Okay.
I just ordered some platinum, so.
Okay.
Great.
Well, who has the Aura camera?
A friend of mine used to come through town here to one of the metaphysical bookstores that's no longer open.
Oh.
And
so where's that person now?
Asheville, up in Asheville or Black Mountain.
North Carolina. Okay, you still in touch with them?
I'm down here again. Maybe she'll stay at my house and she'll do a bunch of free photos for me again. That'd be real nice. But
well,
they come out as 3-inch
well,
by 3-inch.
Yeah, well, let's, if you email me her contact information, if we'll talk to her first. Let's send her some and see if she can do some more pics. Because the people here kind of flaked on me. They, you know, Sedona people, it's like, what do you mean a high resolution scan? I mean, it's like way over their head, and they just couldn't deal with it. So I need a new aura pick person.
I'm surprised there's not a bunch of them there in Sedona.
No, you would be surprised. Everybody thinks that this is, you know, some great metaphysical haven and stuff like that. Actually, it's a bunch of hicks.
Well, I know some of them hicks, and I think one of them has an aura camera. Let me get in touch with her, and maybe I can put you two together.
Where, here?
Yeah, uh-huh, sure enough.
Well, it was her name is Phoenix, and her husband's name is Leon in Sedona, and they just freaked on us. I mean, we've had this happen before where they just can't handle the energy level. They can't handle the shift factor, and they'll freak. And this is what happened to these people. They just freaked on us. And we didn't even do anything. It's like we called them Monday morning, and they were just like crazy. They just like, ah, what do you
put
mean?
Put some Ormus in their tea.
Well, they had a big bottle of the platinum elixir. They just couldn't deal with it.
This is what happened when the lady took my aura photo in Paris. I went to this psychic fair in Paris, and she took the picture, and she took one look at it, and she got real excited. She said, oh, this is the picture of the medium. And I said, no, I'm a large.
That's funny. You're too funny.
Well, with that, I think we need to thank Chaz for a wonderful presentation.
Well, you're welcome. That was fun.
We're going to say goodbye, and whoever wants to say thank you, go for it.
Yes, thank you, Chaz. That was a wonderful presentation.
Okay, and don't hesitate to email me if anybody has any questions or anything. And enjoy out there. And remember, It's all about consciousness. This stuff is an educational toy only. And so you have to use the tool, learn the lesson. It's all about consciousness of yourself, your relationship to the planet, the solar system, and the galaxy. That's what it's all about.
I hear you there. I'm right even with that one for sure.
Okay.
That was very interesting.
Too. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you,
okay. Well, have fun out there.